And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. Y'all, I'm talking about this show. Whew, goes like from Huntsville all the way back over to Chattanooga. I'm talking about from Tuscaloosa back on over to Gadsden. I mean, all the way down to that prettiest little town on the plains called Auburn. Oh, yes, stretching across to Fort Benning. I called it Fort Benning. And big old patches of northwest Georgia and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. All right, you guys, listen, we got plenty on tap right now. I got a couple more text messages. Text it in, call it in, same number, 833-687-4448. Jeff Rowe from Indiana says, Phil, regarding my monologue, Phil, the problem is that judges are not held accountable and they have too much power, which needs to stop. If they can't cite in the law how they are ruling on a case and the case should be dismissed, basically we need a judge, someone who goes around and has the power and authority to charge them with malice of a defendant and throw them off the bench and, if necessary, put them in a jail if that's how egregious it is. I'm tired of kings and queens in black robes. Okay, all right, Jeff Rowe, I gotta challenge you a bit on that because that's not the case. Are there activist judges? Yes. Can they be removed from office? Yes, they can. And they have been. In Alabama, it's called the JIC, the Judicial Inquiry Commission. If a complaint is filed against a judge, the JIC will look into it. It's almost like an ethics commission for politicians, but they will look into it. And more than once, they have sanctioned a judge. I have watched them actually remove a judge from office. I am aware of judges, being reprimanded. And, oh, by the way, judges, the appellate process is what deals with their decision-making. So when a judge at the lower level gets activist or does not use appropriate, does what the law calls an abuse of discretion, is plainly or palpably wrong, that's the legal descriptions, then they can be reversed on appeal and the judge has to deal with the fact that what they did was deemed by their hires to be dismissed and reversed and even sometimes remanded with instructions about how you better do a better job next time. So they do have accountability. And that accountability is first the appellate process and secondly, Judicial Inquiry Commission, and every state has one. On the federal bench, they're actually appointed. Once they're appointed for what's called life or good cause. Life or good cause. That means they're there as long as they want to be there, kind of like a Supreme Court justice, but they can be removed for good cause. And I know of one here in Alabama that was removed for good cause. Something about infidelity with a staff member. That'll do it. But anyway, so the bottom line is, brother, we don't like them. We have to point them out when we see it. We have to make the proper complaints to the proper authorities, and we also have to use the appellate process. The only problem, I know this is true, because I've had clients in this position, where they may have grounds for appeal. And by the way, being mad is not grounds for appeal. If you look at a judge's decision and you say, that is just plainly and palpably wrong, judge, you just overlooked the evidence. Judge, you didn't. Or Your Honor, I objected three times at trial and you didn't grant my objection and you should have. All those things are appealable offenses. And the problem is the appeal process is expensive. You still got to pay a lawyer. You still got to pay court fees. You got to actually supply the transcript of the hearing to the appellate court to review so they can read it too, which means you have to pay for the transcript to be generated. I mean, you can get into a couple of $1,000 just to be allowed to appeal something. So, but then again, if it was free, there would be abuses of it. So it's a fine line. Bottom line is, I'm opining here a little bit, but there are indeed ways to hold judges accountable. Stephen from Athens says, agenda-driven justice often comes from federal district courts located in liberal states. It does. And, oh, by the way, even in red states. Because, like I said, federal district court judges are appointed for life or good cause. We've got one here in the state of Alabama, and I'm going to go ahead and step out there and say his name. It's Judge Myron Thompson. Judge Myron Thompson is the judge that the liberals always try to get to, so they will file things in his jurisdiction because they know that he is much more liberal in his view of the law, and he has overturned, I can't tell you how many things that are what I would call conservative, pro-life, good laws passed by Republicans who took power after he was appointed. I think he was appointed, he's been on the bench for a while. He was definitely appointed by a Democrat. I'm trying to think how far back. May have been Obama, but maybe further than that. Anyway, bottom line is yes. All right, let me jump into some of this though. Let's talk about some activist judges. that we can see are activists. Now, where we can really see activist judges in the last few years is anything with Trump's name attached to it. And there have been some that have done a good job, and there have been some who, while they you could tell they didn't like Trump, they still ruled in accordance with the laws and the procedures. There's two things here. One is going to, or three things actually. You're going to have rulings on the law. If the judge is the sole arbiter of the facts in the law, then he can make a decision based upon what is before him and what's called an Ortenis ruling. That means it was just him by himself. He issued his rules sua sponte, meaning this I do freely of my own. But if the jury is present, if this is a jury trial, then the judge will be the decider of the legals. The jury will be the decider of the facts. And the judge will also then charge the jury with the law that they have to apply to the facts. There you go. So a judge can be reversed if you object to something being allowed in and it shouldn't have been, being allowed to be said or not said and it should or shouldn't have been. And by the way, there's a procedure. You can't just go into court and yell, "That ain't right." You know, that doesn't work that way. I mean, there's a reason why people have to go to law school. And there's a reason why you have to have decorum and you have to have procedure. There are what we call rules of civil procedure, rules of criminal procedure, and rules of evidence. You can't just throw anything out there. I can't tell you how many times I've had a client tell me, "Well, but you know what I saw on Facebook yesterday? That is not evidence. I can't use that." "Well, but somebody so-and-so told me." "Well, that's called hearsay. I can't use that." "Well, you know what I think is?" "I can't use that. That's called an opinion." And unless we're in a certain category where you have an exemption or an exception under the law, you can't just sling every opinion you've got about somebody. Now, if you want to lay a proper foundation for it, if you've been asked to form an opinion because you qualify for an exception to hearsay, we can do that. But you can't just start slinging everything at the wall and hoping it sticks. Okay, I'm really kind of going afield here, but I feel like I'm giving y'all lessons in the law. But this is courtroom, all right? Courtroom procedure is real. Courtroom procedure is not My Cousin Vinny, all right? Courtroom procedure is not even what you're going to see on Law and Order, which does a better job at the very least. Courtroom procedure is not Matlock. Courtroom procedure actually has, and depending on the courtroom, can be very formal. I mean, I've had some courtrooms where I stand up, and before I say a word, I say, "May it please the court." And I'll address the court formally. "Your Honor, may it please the court." "Your Honor, may I approach?" You don't just walk up to the bench and start telling the judge something. Mm-mm, no, that is not your bench to walk up to. "Your Honor, may I approach the witness?" "You may." I mean, everything has formality. Why? Order, decorum, and the proper presentation of the facts and the law. That matters. And it should matter. It absolutely should. I mean, we don't want kangaroo courts, and we don't want jackleg operations. We don't want jackassery in the application of law. You can't be a nation of laws and have a nation with no decorum. But there are some judges now taking the bench that have totally lost sight of that. And a part of what we're seeing right now is in, you know, the survival of lawfare, a lot was exposed. There were some judges who did some craziness when it came to Trump. I guess they thought they'd get away with it because they didn't think Trump would win. I don't know. There's also some craziness out there in terms of federal district courts right now ruling against things the Trump administration is doing, DOJ being a classic example. We're seeing lawsuits flying right now for DOJ. So here's an article I pulled off of Daily Caller. DOJ, let's see, this one's titled, "Here's Where Dozens of Legal Challenges Against Trump Administration Stand." First category, DOJ. Why not? It's got most of them. DOJ. We've got multiple DOJ legal actions being taken as Musk tries to reduce government spending. The result of these challenges have been mixed. On Monday, this article came out yesterday. So on Monday of this week, a district court judge who noted DOJ's unusual secrecy found that DOJ is likely subject to public records requests. Okay. I don't think DOJ has been anything but transparent, probably more transparent than the Democrats have ever been. But this judge said, all right, you have to be subject to public records requests. Okay, fine. But they also point out the cuts that DOJ has apparently made with no congressional input appear to be unprecedented. That's the judge weighing in. giving his opinion. And that, I think, is where this judge may be crossing the line. It's too soon. In a preliminary hearing, the judge can say, I'm troubled by this. I find case precedent that says that. He didn't say that. He just said, you know, looks to be unprecedented the way you're handling things over there, Doge. Well, we'll see where this goes. Several judges have declined to restrict Doge's access, some of which have surprised us. Judge Tanya Chutkan, who couldn't seem to get anything right when she had Trump before her in a criminal tribunal, she actually ruled in Trump's favor, or the Trump team's favor, on a case involving Doge recently. How about spending freezes? Oh, you're going to learn a lot here in a few minutes about a guy named Amir Ali. A Biden-appointed federal judge, Amir Ali, who's been on the bench, I think, for all of 4 months. He has one of the biggest spending freeze anti-Trump cases out there. And this judge, Amir Ali, who is an activist, said the executive branch not only claims constitutional authority to determine how to spend appropriated funds, but usurps Congress's exclusive authority to dictate whether the funds should be spent in the first place. A little early for that, but it clearly shows you where this judge is going. So, yes, that's an activist judge. And I got more on him in a minute. Firing federal workers? Ah, gee. Holy cow. Lawsuits brought by several labor unions and nonprofits. Judge William Alsup, a Clinton appointee, found that the termination of probationary employees was likely illegal. Why? They're probationary. Isn't that the very nature of being a probationary employee, that we're not sure we're going to keep you? And when we decide to keep you, we'll tell you. And if we decide not to keep you, thanks for coming in. But that activist judge believes that you don't have any authority to cancel the employment of probationary employees. Why the heck not? How about the bounds of executive authority? Here's another series of lawsuits. Obama-appointed Judge Beryl Howell said that Trump removing one of the executives at the National Labor Relations Board was illegal. Why? Well, we don't really understand, but he thinks it wasn't right. And then the executive orders. Holy cow, the executive orders. Everything from gender ideology, birthright, citizenship, diversity, equity, and inclusion, all of it. Multiple lawsuits. And we're watching judges right now, like one in federal judge in Maryland, blocked part of Trump's orders on DEI. We got any number of things happening right here. But y'all, some of these judges, I'll read them out to you here in a minute. We come back from the break. Some of these judges are literally coming to the bench as activists and seem to have difficulty setting aside their activist role prior to taking the bench and keeping it going. And that, my friends, is where we get way far afield of what I talked about earlier with Wyatt Earp, trying to keep things on an even keel and evenly applying justice overall. I'll tell you more about it after the break. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. Activist judges, that's where we are. We'll talk about it. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just making common sense like a superpower. Got an awesome text from Hillbilly Yankee from Huntsville complimenting the show. And Hillbilly Yankee, thank you very much. We appreciate that more than you can possibly know. Made my day. So I appreciate it. Gary from Decatur said, I'm sorry, Phil, but all the consequences you told Jeffro from Indiana that activist judges could face are mere slaps on the wrist, in my opinion. And the instances you cited were judges from Alabama. I wonder what the number of judges in D.C., San Francisco, Chicago, and all the other blue jurisdictions are. Probably minimal. But what I'm trying to say is, don't think they live without some measure of accountability. I'm not saying it's always perfect. not by a stretch. I think that there is a... I think it also depends on the venue, very much so. I mean, when you mentioned San Francisco, I don't expect a federal district court judge in San Francisco to have near the same measure of accountability for things that we care about. Keep in mind, it's what we care about versus what they care about. So, yes, I totally get it, Gary, but it's not a slap on the wrist. Listen, if you're a judge and you render a ruling on a substantive matter and it gets reversed and remanded, that's like, you know, that's a big deal. That goes on your win-loss record. So all of a sudden, you're known as that judge who gets reversed. And I'm sure it happens to all of them at some point. But then you can begin to see trends. The ones who make decisions that are inappropriate on a regular basis and get reversed often, those judges, if they're electable, they don't get reelected. Then you've got the issue of the JIC, if you've got a judicial inquiry commission doing things the way it's supposed to, and in Alabama, it's happened, then you're going to see things happening. And that, I mean, just look back at Roy Moore. There's a classic example. Granted, I think that some of Roy Moore's stuff was Roy Moore, but some of it was actually just people that were out to get Roy Moore. And the JIC got involved in that. All right, so the guide to the Federalist is always great. Have I got a phone call? I am so sorry. Let me just jump on that phone call real quick. Robert from Athens, how are you?
I'm good, Phil. You doing all right?
I'm good, sir. Sorry about that. I forgot you were on the line. I apologize.
Oh, that's okay. You know, are you old enough to remember when they in the post offices they had these billboards? And they would put most wanted on. Do you remember that, or are you too young?
No, absolutely. Well, I'm about to turn 60. I remember all that.
Oh, okay. You know, you're talking about these activist judges. I think they ought to put their pictures up on the poster board, you know, just so everybody can see it.
Well, yeah, they have a thing now called the internet where they can actually do that. And there's, you know, some judges get called out all the time. And some of them, though, it's not reasonable. Like doxing a judge and showing up at his house to protest is never going to be reasonable. But letting people know how they rule, that's absolutely fair game.
But, you know, if a judge can tie the hands of our president, our great president, we don't live in a representative government. We live by whatever the judges want to do.
Well, so I'll tell you what. Hey, by the way, let me just talk on that for a minute, and I'll thank you for the call right now, so I appreciate the call. So I've heard it said before, and it's true, that the most powerful person in the world is a federal district court judge. That's the lower courts in the federal court system. Most powerful person in the world is the federal district court judge. Why? Because it's the only court of law that can tell the president of the United States what to do. Everything after that is an appeal of what that judge did. Think about it. So if a federal district court judge says, President Trump, you are hereby enjoined from taking that action with Doge, you can't do it. Well, that's the only court that can tell him what to do. Anybody who addresses it after that is just literally considering whether that court got it right or wrong. So a federal district court judge is by design part of the three branches of government. The judicial system is designed to provide the checks and balances to the executive and the legislative. If Congress gets crazy and passes a law that is unconstitutional, the courts are designed to tell them you can't do it that way. If Congress passes a law that is constitutional and the executive branch does a bad job of implementing it, then the courts are designed to help address that issue. So it's frustrating. There are times when I don't agree with it. I can look back at when Obamacare got upheld. Thank you, Justice Roberts. When Obamacare got up, I thought that was absolutely a travesty of justice. But it also had every level of appeal, and it had every level of action. And at some point, I have to recognize I can't go any further with it. It's just stuck now. Federal district court judges, they can be screwballs, and there are activist judges. I'm not trying to say, though, that they don't have purpose. It just means they've got to have accountability with that purpose. I got more on this. I'm going to tell you about some who are truly activists. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama and Tennessee's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, don't forget, coming up bottom of the hour, by the way, we'll have a round of Butters and Lee at 3:30. And then the next dipper is going to be one you might want to hear. Almost our entire listening area is going to have a new governor coming up after the 2026 elections. Florida, Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, all having open seats because their incumbent governors are term limited and won't be running again. That makes it for a very exciting time. Who's going to run? We'll talk about that, too, after Butters and Lee, so stand by for that. I got several great text messages. Let me jump on some. I will tell you this. One of the greatest text messages I could get came from the lovely Charlene a moment ago. And she just pointed out something that I've actually said to juries multiple times, that you can look around the world right now. You can get really aggravated at our judicial system, but you can look around the world right now, and it's still the best one in the world. So there's that. And I think that's a perspective we need to have. I get frustrated. I'm a lawyer, and I get frustrated. I get frustrated for my clients. I get frustrated for myself as an attorney. I get frustrated as someone who cares about politics and the enforcement of public policy. But I have been to other countries. In fact, let me step back and just tell a story. How about that? I'm going to tell a story here for a minute. Can I chase a rabbit? Do you mind?
Permission granted.
Thank you so much. Mr. President, I would like a moment of personal privilege. So, Afghanistan, 2002. Beginning of the war, I am there on a small team out in the middle of nowhere. Among all the combat operations and patrols and things that we did as we lived as a small team in the middle of an Afghan village, I mean, literally eating Afghan food and you know, and getting dysentery to prove it, and I mean, riding horses sometimes, it was craziness. But in the middle of all of that, part of my job was also to try and do things to bolster the populace's opinion, win the hearts and minds, if you will, but also show them that it was a new day and the Taliban were gone. One of the ways we could do that was to put schools back in order. The Taliban had most often seized school buildings and turned them into barracks for their troops because they were big buildings. Why not? Kids don't need an education, especially women. Women were absolutely abused and subjugated. So one of the first things we tried to do was put schools back in place, and especially girls' schools. There's a girls' school. It was really large, actually, in the community of Kunduz, where my team lived in what we called a safe house among the Afghan people. And this school, I still remember it, Bibi Khadija Tol Kobra Girls' School. The girls flocked in there to go back to school. I mean, I'm talking flocked in. But the Taliban, they were Neanderthals, and they didn't have any means of doing anything productive. And so rather than, you know, go out and cut firewood and do the things that most Afghans do, they burned all the desks to stay warm in the wintertime. So the girls were all sitting on the floor. Concrete floors, mostly. Concrete or dirt. They were just sitting there, but they were loving school and they were learning. So one of the things that we did was the U.S. government contracted to have desks built for those girls, and we were going to have a big opportunity to present them all these desks. I had like every carpenter in Kunduz, Afghanistan building desks. Sounds crazy. It's in a war, right? But that's part of my gig. So come the day, I'm looking for the desks to be finished up. And I mean, like, we're talking about several hundred desks. And I get word that the local warlord, a guy named Mirlam Khan, has decided he's going to stop the contracts. What he was really doing was looking for kickbacks. What he was really doing was trying to exert his power and be the control man. He's a strong man. Don't you not know who I am? So I got together my team, a few security guards, and we rolled in on Mirlam's headquarters. Mirlam was a strong man. He had all his flunkies standing around him. He was holding court. Picture Jabba the Hutt. That's what I'm thinking. I mean, just go ahead and picture Jabba the Hutt. Kind of a big, kind of a burly-looking guy, leaned back in his chair, all of his lackeys standing around him, everybody staring. Whatever Mirlam says is funny. Whatever he wants is done. And Mirlam looks at me, and he begins to argue with me through my interpreter that he's in charge. And I said, you are not in charge. This is a contract with the United States government. You will not stop it. At some point, he finally realized he was getting nowhere. And he said, Fine, I will tell them they can begin the contract again. I said, thank you. And then he looked at me, and I'll never forget this. And I've told juries this. He looked at me and he said, well, in America, when somebody's doing things with a contract they don't like, who's in charge of it? Because here it is my job. And I said, that's easy, the lawyers. The whole room broke out laughing when my interpreter said that. They thought that was the funniest, maybe stupidest thing they'd ever heard. They broke out laughing, and I realized I was in a place right then where the rule of law had no respect. It was the rule of the strong man, not the rule of law. Lawyers, what do lawyers do? Lawyers draw up papers. That's all they do over there. They could care less. Lawyers are frivolous. It was a strong man over there that got things done. Here, the rule of law can beat the strong man. It can. So there's my story on the rule of law being powerful and why it's necessary to consider that where we are right now, it may be kind of, you may get grumpy with it, but the reality is, as much as I don't like activist judges either, I still wouldn't trade our system of jurisprudence for any in the world.
But it's stories like that that put it into perspective, because we're so blessed to live in the United States that we don't it's almost like we forget that part of the world even exists, and we get spoiled. And obviously, stuff like that happens, like we saw with Trump with the judicial system. It's fair to call out when the judicial system falls short, but ultimately, like you said, wouldn't trade it for any other one in the world.
Absolutely. But can we do a better job? Yes. And can we avoid activist judges? One would hope. Let me tell you about a few. Amir Ali. Pray tell, Phil, who is Judge Amir H. Ali? Well, he's a Biden appointee. Oh, good. He was one of the last judges that Biden got in his last few months in office. Oh, good. Confirmed by the Senate under, yeah, I'm sure Mitch McConnell really helped with that. But confirmed by the Senate as Chuck Schumer was in charge of it, because confirmations go through the Senate only. Ali, before he came on the bench, he specialized in cases involving what he called police and prosecutorial misconduct and civil rights. Okay, red flags, danger, Will Robinson. Well, Judge Amir Ali is everything you would expect him to be. In fact, his specialty law firm was called the MacArthur Justice Center. His partner had a podcast in which his partner actually talked about moving towards defunding police and making police obsolete. Oh, good. That's the law firm he worked at before he got appointed to the bench.
That tracks.
Yeah, it does track. Tracks quite well. Ali said he didn't share those views, but yet he continued to work there. Oh, sure. Align yourselves with those who speak like that, and you are like that. How about that? It was Ali who recently said the Trump administration will have to go ahead and pay out $2 billion in USAID funds that Trump has frozen. And he's being pretty belligerent about it. The dynamic we've got is the Trump administration appealed his ruling immediately to the Supreme Court of the United States, and much to the chagrin of the conservative justices, Justice Roberts sided with the liberal judges and decided not to take up the case. In other words, Judge Ali gets to move forward. That's an activist who took the bench right there. That's an activist who literally took the bench. But I got one even worse than that, because someone needs to explain how in the world a judge by the name of Anna Reyes, I mean, I got a couple of them here. Good Lord. How did Anna Reyes take the bench? Well, Justice Anna Reyes, who I'm trying to figure out who she was appointed by, but I think it may have been Biden. But Judge Anna Reyes has made it very clear that she does not care for Pete Hegseth as Secretary of Defense. In fact, she's even ordered him to take down his social media posts. What? Yes. So Judge Anna Reyes takes issue with the idea that Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth may have something to say about transgenders serving in the military. U.S. District Court Judge Anna Reyes, a Biden appointee, there it is, who previously stated that the idea of only two sexes is not biologically correct. Oh boy. This is Fox News. Dateline yesterday. Heard arguments about the Pentagon's attempt to ban transgender individuals. Okay, so you've got a judge who has openly stated in the past they don't agree with the idea of biological sex being just two, is now presiding over a case involving transgenders in the military. What does that tell you? Immediate opportunity for recusal. So is anyone going to apply or file a motion to recuse? I don't know, but that's where we are. During the hearing, Reyes pointed to a post on X in which Hegseth quoted said, Pentagon says transgender troops are disqualified for service without an exemption. And she began to aggressively question the Trump administration lawyers. She went on to say things too, like Second Lieutenant Talbot, who is the transgender, a chick who believes she's a dude, has more commendation than books in our library. I got news. I checked into Lieutenant Talbot. He's a second lieutenant. He has no prior enlisted service other than going to OCS. He does not have a slew of commendations more than books in the library. In fact, I would dare say he probably has like an I was there ribbon and a Army service ribbon and maybe a marksmanship badge, which officers never wear anyway. Reyes fired back saying that Secretary Hegseth's decisions appear to have been informed by studies that undercut the actual policy. In other words, what she's doing is she's spending a lot of her time criticizing Hegseth, having a predisposition because she's an activist who now has the bench. She even went on to say that she has a Pac-Man machine in her office, which she uses for stress release, and believes that that's something that, I don't know, the whole thing is just wacky. Is there a motion to recuse? Can we get it heard, please? I got a little more on this, including one right here in Alabama. I'll tell you about him in a moment. We'll take a break and come right back, and I'll wrap this up. Activist judges, we have the best system in the world, but even the best system in the world can have some folks in it who don't keep it in the best shape. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man. Pulling pins on truth grenades in here. Got a bunch of text messages piling up. I will get to them shortly. Thank y'all very much. Please check it and send them on in. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Tell me what you think. Here's another activist judge for you. So there's a law firm called Perkins Coie. You may remember them. They're one of those mega firms. Perkins Coie. They were the ones who were the prime drivers of the Russia collusion hoax. Perkins Coie. Well, Perkins Coie just had their security clearances revoked by President Trump. So, you know, hey, sorry for your luck. Except that they got U.S. District Judge Beryl Howell at the hearing now. So U.S. District Judge Beryl Howell has decided that Trump is not allowed to revoke security clearances. Guess who's in charge of security clearances? That would be the President of the United States of America. Now, this is an injunction. It does not mean that the merits of the case can't later on decide that Trump wins. But right now, the idea that the President of the United States cannot withhold a security clearance from somebody is unconscionable to me.
That one's just hilarious to me.
It just defies description. We do have one here in Alabama, and I'll just tell you, I mean, I've never had to practice in front of him. I don't do a ton of district court, federal court work. Most of mine is in state court. But U.S. District Judge Myron Thompson. U.S. District Judge Myron Thompson is the one judge, if I had to pick one, that I have seen do more damage to conservative issues in Alabama than anybody. He's like the judge of choice for liberals who don't like what we've got going on in the state legislature, and so they're going to sue on it. And if they take it to federal court, they're praying they get U.S. District Judge Myron Thompson. So Judge Thompson just recently heard another hearing about Alabama groups that are funding out-of-state abortions. And we'll find out what he's going to do on this. But he has constantly been in the thick of things when it comes to basically taking a look at conservative policies passed by the Alabama legislature and either reversing them, shrinking them down, abrogating their scope. And then you got... And then you got others that are out there doing what they do. Like, for instance, you've got a judge right now that is deciding whether or not this Mahmoud Khalil can be deported. Now, I will say this. That judge, so far, this does not seem to be, like, getting far afield. I think that judge has actually said you can't deport him, but it's yet. So you can't deport him yet, but the judge also didn't release him. The judge didn't discuss that I've seen the merits of Trump's actions. The don't deport him now appears to be the judge saying, if you deport him, I will lose jurisdiction over the issue. So more to come on that. We'll wait and see. Here's the bottom line. I love our system of jurisprudence. Don't think I don't. I do. I can't stand activist judges. I can't. I have seen judges that got political and they know they're not supposed to. I have seen judges that had predispositions and they know they're not supposed to. I've seen judges who had personal contacts or prior contacts with one of the parties and they should have recused, but they didn't. And then I even had to call a judge not long ago who recused and I felt like they shouldn't. And I said, Your Honor, can I ask why you recused? Well, it's my prerogative. Well, I know it's your prerogative, sir. But I'm just telling you, on behalf of my client, I feel like they have to start the case over now. And you didn't have to recuse. Well, Phil, it's not really your choice. I understand that, sir. So that's kind of how that conversation went. I lost. But you know, but the bottom line is this. I don't always agree with judges, but I love our system of jurisprudence. But I can't stand an activist judge. I cannot stand an activist DA. You do not come in with the blindfold off. You have to come in with the blindfold on. I've seen lazy judges and active judges. I've seen solid judges, and I've seen bad judges. I've seen political judges, and I've seen apolitical judges. I've been practicing for 23 years. I feel like I've seen a bit. But the reality is this. Judges can be wrong, and I get that. I can be wrong and they can decide that, and I get that. But a judge should never be an activist. And right now, some of what we're seeing, especially the last couple of years, we have some activist judges, especially on the federal bench.
So let me ask you something about old Mahmoud.
Mahmoud Khalil.
I saw somebody arguing that the free speech, that basically this is still an infringement on his free speech because the Constitution.
Negative.
The Constitution applies to everybody in the United States, whether they're actually like a U.S. citizen or not. And I thought that was like, okay, I don't know if that's necessarily true or not, but even if it is, I feel like this is not an infringement on his free speech. This is just the United States simply doing what they are legally allowed to do and revoke a student's student visa. Like, first of all, I don't know if the Constitution applies to everybody in the U.S., even if they're a citizen or not. But even if that was true, I mean, isn't this just the government doing what they're legally allowed to do?
It is the government doing what it's legally allowed to do because federal law clearly dictates that the power to approve a visa is vested in the Secretary of State and the power to revoke a visa is vested in the Secretary of State. And Marco Rubio said it himself quite clearly. If he had made known his intentions before he got his visa, he never would have gotten his visa. And yes, free speech, there are ways in which that can be considered to be curtailed for foreigners living in the United States. One of which is trying to undermine the authority and promote anarchy. And that's exactly what he was doing. All right, coming back, Butters and Lee, you guys stay tuned. We will be right back.